What about selection of chemotherapy, cis versus carbo, and what to pair with it?
Well, the data doesn't give you many choices. The only trial that used carboplatin was negative. All the meta-analysis in stage four say that carboplatin is probably inferior in stage four, though not tremendously so, but it is inferior when you crunch all the numbers. I did an analysis years ago of the neoadjuvant, and it was the same observation, that it's somewhat worse. So here, where the goal is cure, and you're dealing with an inherently fitter population of patients, cisplatinum makes the most sense. And I think that's the feeling of majority of oncologists. It's sort of interesting that even people that would automatically give carboplatin to somebody with stage 4 disease would more likely than not give cisplatinum for somebody with stage 2 disease.
Well, it's interesting. We just completed our first patterns of care study in lung cancer. We've done these in breast and prostate and colon. And there's a major difference in selection of adjuvant chemo in the clinical investigators we surveyed in docs in practice. Clinical investigators, pretty much cis. Docs in practice, 3-to-1 carbotaxol over everything else. I'm sure that doesn't surprise you.
No, it doesn't surprise me at all.
It's just kind of an interesting dichotomy, one of the strongest differences we've seen between investigators and docs in practice and in any of the tumors in this question. What about the patient who the doc has, or you have some reservations about using cis, or do you feel like if you have a patient who got through surgery, they should be able to get through the cis?
Yeah, well, by and large, that's true, because by the nature of this, they have already been through a morbid surgery. A pneumonectomy, for example, is the most morbid and mortal cancer surgery. More people die in complications of pneumonectomy than in hepatic resections, pelvic excenerations, Whipples, esophageal removals. I mean, it's really a morbid procedure in the population group we treat, you know, 70 and 80-year-olds. So the fact that they made it through that defines a certain kind of physiology where you can more often than not get away with it. Unfortunately, there are patients that have renal insufficiency. Hearing loss is a big problem. And then you have to make a compromise. And sadly, we don't have any data to do that at this point because all the clinical trials that showed benefit included cisplatin.
Well, how do you approach the choice of agent to combine with cis in the adjuvant setting?
Yeah, well, I define with cis. At this point, that's pretty easy, too. I mean, if you look at all the trials, vinorelbine cis is the one that has had the most study. And from a practical standpoint, using the regimen from BR10, the Canadian trial, of 16 weekly vinorelbine infusions with cisplatin given on the first and second infusion of each month, that's a very tolerable regimen. I've personally made one modification on that regimen, and that is instead of adjusting the vinorelbine dose or holding it based on the count that day, knowing that some doses are going to be attenuated, I automatically give full and half doses on alternating weeks. As it turns out, if you do that, you end up giving a total dose of vinorelbine slightly greater than people got on the BR10 protocol where doses were held. The other thing that I found very useful in that approach is that patients receiving adjuvant therapy are really devastated when they don't get that therapy. I mean, they see it as a step toward cure. They're also impatient. They want it over. And to either not get a dose or lengthen your treatment is very upsetting to them. So being able to give a dose on each day is something that everybody finds acceptable. And it turns out you end up giving more drug anyway. So I would recommend people try that because I think it's a more effective way of giving the vinorelbine.